Teen Titans Go, Bigfoot Boy, Lola. These mean nothing to you. It's probably an age issue. Morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. It's time for the annual Alaska Spirit of Reading Show, a book club in which kids in school libraries across the state read the same books and get to meet the author, in this case virtually. You can call toll-free 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talkatalaskapublic.org to talk with comic book writer Jay Torres today on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, the first thing about Jay Torres to know is that he doesn't draw these comics, he writes them. And I think the second thing to know is that he's been to a number of different places in Alaska visiting with kids under the Alaska Spirit of Reading program. And he's back home in Toronto now, where he has a home office and writes comic books all day. How cool is that? Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jay Torres. How are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's great to talk to you and to penetrate this world that, you know, takes me back, I don't know how many years to when I used to read comics. Or in this case, I'm not even sure whether we're talking like TV cartoons or exactly what. You seem to have your fingers in all of them.
Yeah, I do a little bit of everything, all kinds of comics from newspaper strips, which actually I haven't done in a number of years, but I've done the regular, you know, periodical type comics, the monthlies, and graphic novels, which are bigger page counts, you know, 80, 90, 100 pages. So I do a lot of stuff in, as you said, in different formats and different genres.
Yeah. Well, I brought up this Teen Titans Go because I had some vague memory about Teen Titans, but this is like an iteration of an iteration of an iteration of the Teen Titans that some of our listeners might know about.
Yes, that's right. The original Teen Titans debuted sometime in the 60s, and I caught up with them in the 80s, which was, I guess, their second iteration. And I've lost count. I don't know what generation this comic book is considered part of, or what iteration, but, you know, somewhere like 4 or 5 reboots down the line, is when Teen Titans Go debuted. And originally what they did was they took the 80s the 80s comic book and sort of applied some Japanese anime sensibilities to it to create a new cartoon that was a huge hit on Cartoon Network. And then I would work on the comic books, which had all new stories but were part of the same, you know, same universe, same continuity. And so if you watch the cartoon and read the comics, there were extra stories and extra, you know, character situations that you didn't see on the show that you would see in the comics and that sort of thing.
We're speaking with Jay Torres. He is he's a writer of comic books, and he is by Skype from his home and his office in Toronto. And how is it that you work, Jay, with the artists to make these comics? Because I always think of, it seems like the storyboard is absolutely critical to the way that the story gets told, and that almost goes to the writer's end of things. This is like a collaborative thing that you just look at storyboards and decide, or you say you want 3 panels of this and 2 of that, and what?
Yeah, there are different methods. The method you just described is sort of what some people call the Marvel method. So basically the artist and the writer work together on the visuals and kind of go backwards in terms of the dialogue. So the artist would draw the story and then the writer would go back and add dialogue or captions and sound effects and that sort of thing. But the way that I work and the way that most people work these days is called a full script method. So basically you would write a script, and a comic book script looks very similar to a screenplay or even a stage play. But whereas a stage play gives direction for the actor or the screenplay gives direction for the camera, my direction in the comic script is for the artist.
Okay,
so they would then create the storyboard from that.
I'm getting it. So in other words, you would say garbage can on a dingy street, and then you would say garbage can lid ajar, and you'd kind of go like that.
Right, exactly. That's right.
I gotcha. And so obviously, you know, the artist pretty well knows what to do, and then who decides whether it's suitable to the vision, and whose vision is it?
Well, I guess it depends on who the project originates with. I mean, I've done stuff that we call creator-owned, which is basically an idea that I create on my own with the artist and start from scratch. Other times it's a freelance gig. So like Teen Titans Go, the Teen Titans, which are owned by DC Comics, the home of Batman and Superman and all those guys. So ultimately they get final say if the story works, if the art works and that sort of thing. But when it's something that, you know, I created and it's our characters, then, you know, we get the final say.
Batman? Have you done Batman?
Yes, I've actually contributed to three or four different titles now.
Really?
So yeah, so there've been Batman's had numerous titles over the years, and there have been titles that were for younger readers and titles that were for an older demographic, titles that connected to the movies or the TV shows or the cartoons. So I've been lucky enough to have had the opportunity to contribute to a few of those.
So, Jay Torres, what, you know, if I were to go looking for your material, I'm a little perplexed as to where I would find it. Why I go to our local comic store. We have a great comic store in town called Bosco's, and they have a lot of graphic novels, and people go in there and play fantasy games and all. You know, it's kind of a little headquarters there. And, it probably still has some Dungeons & Dragons stuff in it. But, so you get some real legacy material in there. Would that be the likely venue? Because I'm not thinking of a newsstand where I see these.
You're right. The one place to look is a local comic store. But obviously not everybody's lucky enough to have a local comic store where they are. You can also buy my books from online sources like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Your library hopefully has some of my books. You can even download stuff on iTunes. So you just do a search for Jay Torres and you should be able to locate a book or two.
Oh, yeah, and just an absolute wealth of imagery. That was what got me going. I says, how can this guy draw in so many different styles? And I realized, oh, wait a minute, he writes. Other people draw. This one book that I have of yours, Lola, is clearly a graphic novel, and it looks like it's something that you personally are very attached to, and which I expect that our listeners will want to talk about. And it's hardcover, and really got some creepy stuff in it for kids. So maybe you could tell me a little bit about this. And, you know, I know you were born in Manila. Part of this happens in Manila. So I'm kind of assuming that there's personal stuff in here.
Yeah, it was inspired by stories that my aunts and my grandmother used to tell me about, things that go bump in the night in the Philippines. You know, every culture has their boogeyman. They have their legends and their ghost stories. So I used to hear a lot of that kind of stuff when I was younger, and it sort of inspired me to come up with this story. And so it takes place in a rural part of the Philippines where my grandparents grew up and my grandmother still lives right now. And so that's where Lola, a ghost story, comes from.
And I want to point this out in particular, because I know we have listeners who in their indigenous culture have similar stories to some of these things. And the one I particularly was taken with was the little baby crying off in the woods. It turns out to be some kind of nasty thing waiting to snare you if you get too caught up in the baby.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, I'm trying to think of a Western equivalent, maybe like a changeling or, I'm totally drawing a blank here. But yeah, so they're similar kind of creatures in different cultures that lure you in some way or other, whether it's as a beautiful woman, you know, like a siren or like a lady in white type ghost. And others take the form of something a little more innocent, like a baby. And that's what this creature is in the Philippines. It's supposedly would be something that's hidden in the grass or in the bush, and you would hear a baby crying. And when you approach, being a good Samaritan, you know, you want to help out a baby that's crying. And as soon as you approach, it would turn into its more demonic self and do what demonic things do.
And was this personally told to you, story like this?
Oh yeah, I got a lot of stories like this told to me as a child. I mean, I think a lot of these stories are initially meant as cautionary tales to keep kids away from the deep dark woods and away from areas that they may, you know, there may be danger. So my guess is that's where a lot of these stories originated from.
Well, I want to, at this point, invite people to call and engage with you, Jay Torres. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. There's a stack of emails already coming in. That may be the means of preference. I don't know, Jay. And,
okay.
Yeah, and we got... We know that we have listeners in school libraries across the state because that's how this program goes. So the phone number is 1-800-478-8255 statewide. If you are in Anchorage, you've got to use a local number, 550-8422, and the email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And there's links and stuff at the website as well if you, if you want to go in that way and have a look at some of the stuff that we've been talking about. Although I don't know if we actually have the stuff from Lola on here. And I want to go back to this book, Jay, because I think it's kind of special.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. A number of levels. First off, did it make money?
I'd say yes. It's weird because I'm trying to think. It's more than 5 years old now, and it's been through a couple of printings, and it's been translated into at least two languages other than English so that I can recall. So these things kind of trickle in and the checks come in at different times. So I'm guessing yes,
yeah,
it did.
But
it's really hard to keep track of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. And the artist, Albert Orr, do you continue working with that artist?
I haven't worked with him in a while, but we have kept in touch mostly via email and Instagram. And the interesting thing is, you know, we hadn't actually met. And I know that the kids that I spoke to while I was in Alaska know this, but one of the great things about working in comics is that you can work from home and your artist can work from home and they don't even have to be anywhere remotely close to each other. So he's in the Philippines and we hadn't met until after the book had come out and I did a signing in the Philippines. So that was the very first time that we had actually met, which was about a year after the book was published.
Wow.
And that's very common.
Yeah, you know, what they say to me, because I'm a radio person, you know, they always say to me, you don't look at all like you sound on the radio. So did Albert Orr look like the characters that Albert Orr draws?
Kind of.
Really?
He's sort of a diminutive figure. He's short and has kind of like a cute cartoon look about him. I never thought about that until you just brought it up, actually. But if you Google his name, you'll see pictures of him and you'll see what I'm saying.
I'm loving this. So do you speak Tagalog?
I do. It's a little rusty like my French. I grew up in Montreal and we learned French growing up, but because there's, you know, out here in the suburbs of Toronto, there isn't a lot of occasion for me to speak French or Tagalog, so it's kind of rusty.
And you used to be, before you stumbled on this comics business, you were an ESL teacher.
Yes, I taught ESL for about 5 or 6 years, yeah.
Yeah. And how did your comics career, how did you get it launched?
Well, even while I was teaching ESL, I was writing a little bit on the side, but not making enough money, you know, to make a living. And I was trying to get more work. You know, I would basically teach all day, come home, and then go back to writing until, you know, until it was time to go to bed, and then go back to work the next day and start all over again. And I actually started trying to get work even before I graduated from college. So it was about a 10-year journey, I guess you can say, from, you know, the time that I started to take this seriously to the time that I was able to start doing it full time.
Wow. So you were, I mean, that's, Jay, that is motivated.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something I really wanted to do. A lot of my friends are sort of in the same field, and comics and animation and illustration and children's books. So, you know, being from that kind of, I guess, clique or gang of friends really helped. You know, when I moved, one of the main reasons I moved to Toronto is because there was a more vibrant artistic community and a big comic book community here. And I think that really helped. And it was something I wanted to do. So, you know, I worked hard at it, and it took a while, but I finally got there.
But now you've grown up, you've got a family. And I'll bet you don't get out to that art scene near as much as you once did.
Do you have a crystal ball? Because you're looking right into my life. It's true. You know, every now and then there are events, you know, happening downtown with comic related, you know, launches and art exhibitions and so on. I try to get out, but it's hard, you know, with the kids, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's what happens as you get older anyway. I think it's not particular to the arts. I know people who are accountants and lawyers and whatnot, and the same thing happens to them.
Right. So when you were young, did you go through this phase of putting out your own zines and all that sort of thing?
I did in college, and that's basically how I first got published. A lot of people around me were doing it. So my friend Tim Levins, who's an artist, he and I decided to put out our own zine, our own little mini comic is what we used to call them. And that's how things really started getting going for us. We put out this thing called the Copybook Tales, and it was sort of a slice of life growing up in the 80s kind of comedy. And that's what started getting our names out there. And eventually we would get work because of people who were fans of the book and later became editors or assistant editors at different comic book companies.
So there's a cultural element here. It strikes me, you know, my son is a television producer, and he's all, I mean, there's just these endless series of TV shows that come out that are kind of sketches of everyday life, you know, and he's very involved in all that sort of thing. And it seems that there's something parallel here in the comics world, in that you have to kind of be culturally aware as to what your audience is looking for.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, anything you're trying to sell, you have to sort of get your finger on the pulse of what people are buying.
Yeah,
that goes for music and I guess clothing. You know, everything, the arts, TV. Music and all that. So yeah, to an extent you sort of have to be up on what's popular and what's going, but at the same time you want to kind of follow your own voice as well and put something out there that you hope people will gravitate towards. I'm not sure, you know, anybody was asking for a Filipino ghost story when we put out Lola, but fortunately we did find an audience. So yeah, it's important to see what's out there and what's trending, but at the same time to put out work that speaks to you and that's about you.
Well, Jay Torres, that is exactly what Misty Haynes at Blatchley Middle School wanted to ask you. Where did you get your idea? Where'd you get the idea? I guess I would expand it to, where'd you get the idea that you could possibly ever pull this off?
I think anytime that you're going to present something publicly, involves a little bit of vanity and a little bit of risk-taking. You know, obviously, if you want to be a singer, you have to have some kind of drive in you that says people want to hear me sing, and you hope that they do. So same thing with these stories. I grew up reading a lot of comic books. I grew up reading a lot of books, and I just love stories. I love storytelling. And I thought that was something I could do myself. So, you know, it's kind of presumptuous that you can, and you don't really know until you do and someone says you did a good job. So I guess it's just a question of doing it and putting it out there and hoping that somebody likes what you've done. And I will say this, I was very fortunate in that a lot of my teachers, a lot of my relatives were very encouraging of my creativity, whether it was, you know, creative writing for school or putting together skits for the family at Christmas time or various holidays. I was very lucky that there were a lot of adults around me that were encouraging of that. And I guess that's what part of that was what, for lack of a better word, emboldened me to keep doing it. Because I knew there was an audience out there and I experienced that there were people that would, you know, like what I'm doing. So I hope that answers Misty's question. But I think, you know, part of it is just having the confidence in yourself to think I can do this. Another part of it is having people around you who tell you, yes, you can do this.
Yes, you can. Jay Torres is our guest. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, 1-800-478-8255. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org, where most of our comments are coming in. And this one is from Dasha Crosby, and she just says, Jay, I really like the style of writing you have. Thanks for the great books you write! Exclamation point.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of that?
Sure. Sometimes. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you this. When I was, you know, on tour in Alaska, at times I felt like a rock star because these kids were so good to me and so enthusiastic and so welcoming, and they would swarm me for autographs, and I'd be walking out on the street and if somebody recognized me, they'd call my name. You know, it felt like being some kind of a, you know, celebrity. It was really cool.
Well, you are a celebrity.
Well, you know, not not Lady Gaga.
No, maybe not. I can't actually look at you to know, actually.
Trust me, I'm not wearing a dress made of meat right now.
Jay Torres is our guest. He's the author of Lola, Teen Titans Go, Bigfoot Boy. Bigfoot Boy is still in operation?
Yes, two volumes are out now. A lot of the kids I met had read them. And the third volume, which completes the trilogy, will be out in September.
Oh, boy. Well, why don't you give me a little idea what that story is? Because I can't even imagine. But you can.
Well, it's very simple. If you look at the title, Bigfoot Boy. So it's about a boy who turns into a Bigfoot. And he does so because he finds a magic totem in the woods behind his grandmother's house one day. And once everybody discovers he's got this magic totem, then everybody wants it, from the ravens in the area to the wolves, and also some people, you know, who want that power. So that's what the story is about.
So there's a lot of graphic potential with that. I can see that right away.
Yeah, I think there's something in the air about Bigfoot and Big Feet, Bigfoots and Sasquatches. It's just a thing that everybody's interested in and so into. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I remember reading, you know, books about them, and there were these TV shows. I want to say there was a show that Leonard Nimoy narrated, and they had a whole thing about the Bigfoot.
I'm sure there was.
And you know, to this day, it's still that creature still fascinates people.
Well, in the Turning Back to Lola, a ghost story by Jay Torres and Albert Orr. It took me a while to realize that the kid was seeing some things that other people weren't, including like another person. I mean, it didn't seem to come across to me right away that was a ghost, that this other kid.
Right, well, that was the plan.
Uh-huh. Well, it worked.
Good. I wanted to fool people into thinking that cousin was still alive. But if you kept going, you realize that, he's only one person was actually seeing him the whole time.
Yeah. Well, and this little boy is never really, I would say, was never really nice. Kind of maybe wanting to, even a little devilish and wanting him to take chances and on like that.
Sure. I mean, he's a kid. he died young, unfortunately. And his only thing was he wanted that lost object found. I don't know if that spoils too much, but he wanted his cousin to find that lost object, which was a clue to the entire, you know, mystery, I guess. So yeah, you know, he was acting like a typical 7 or 8 year old.
So how many years you've been doing this now, Jay Torres?
Professionally over 10 years. But like I was saying, for about 10 years before that, you know, I was still struggling to get in, and I would get a job here, a job there, nothing, you know, not quite enough to pay the bills. But eventually I would get more and more assignments and build up my portfolio and my profile and eventually get there. I eventually got there.
So what is the Johnny DC line of DC?
It's the... a line of titles that is geared towards the youngest readers. So if you are a parent or a teacher or a librarian that's concerned about mature content, because I mean, some of these superhero books, even the flagship titles like Superman or Batman, can be kind of violent and have mature themes. So if you're worried about that sort of thing and you're looking for more wholesome, I guess you can say, comics, but still fun, still action packed comics for kids, look towards the Johnny DC line for those kinds of titles.
And here you are, a parent yourself.
Yes. So a lot of the comics from the DC catalog that my boys read are actually from the Johnny DC line.
So there's you got the Eisner Award or Eisner Award nomination. Don't let me exaggerate here.
Right. Yeah, Allison Dare was nominated for, I have to remember the category. It was something like Best Title for a Younger Audience. So every year there's a category, and the Eisners are kind of like our Oscars or our Grammys, I guess, for comics. So there's a Younger Readers category, which actually has been expanded in the last couple of years to have 3 levels. So there's one for the youngest readers, and there's middle readers, and then there's young adult, which I guess is teenagers to, you know, just before college, I guess. So, yeah, so that's, you know, Allison Dare was nominated for an Eisner once upon a time, which was great.
Very early in the book, Lola, your main character, Jesse, makes reference to his grandma trying to drown him. And Dasher Crosby chimes in and says, I was wondering about that part where Grandma tries to drown him. What gave you the idea for that part of the book?
That actually happened to me in real life.
Whoa, I knew it. Somehow I knew that was going to happen.
And just like in real life, I later discovered the real reason. You know, you're a kid, you're being dunked in the water by someone that you really trust unexpectedly, and it kind of freaks you out. So you have to start to wonder why, right? Why was she doing this to me? And the same thing happened to Jesse in the book. But later he discovers that it was all part of this festival for a boat festival or the St. John the Baptist festival. So there was a lot of dunking and sort of pseudo baptizing going on in the river where my grandparents lived. So it was part of the culture there, part of a yearly festival. So that's what it actually happened to me. My grandmother was dunking me during this event. And so I used that in the book because I thought it was kind of a good way to start things off with Jesse wondering, you know, was she doing this to kill me or to get rid of this power in me that I don't understand?
Yeah, it's I think it's a very good device. There's also this business of it's sort of a baptism, but it's also kind of it goes back to, who was it, Achilles, that was dipped in the water by his mom to make him immortal except for his heel.
Right, so it's kind of an anointing of him, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that, because, you know, he gets his power from his grandmother, or we say that he inherited the power from his grandmother, it skipped a generation. So the main theme of the story is, what is he going to do with that? With that power, this gift.
Yeah, and then you finally get to it at the end, which is a total mystery, let me add.
Yes. Well, I wanted to leave it up to the reader.
Whoa.
I wanted readers to sort of try to figure out, well, what would he do? What would you do? You know, does he say something or does he just continue on the way he's been doing, you know, being fairly silent about all this spooky and creepy stuff? And now he really has a choice, a very important choice to make. Previously, he would see creepy things, scary things, and there was really no consequence that presented itself to him immediately. But now, you know, without spoiling too much, at the end of the story, he sees something that is pretty scary, and there could be a consequence. So the question is, what's he going to do?
And you don't tell us.
No, I don't. But I think, depending on your personality and how you look at things, you probably already know the answer.
Yeah, it's the way the story is told. We're speaking with Jay Torres. He's a comic book author. He is the Alaska Spirit of Reading author. And he's with us by Skype from his home in Toronto. And Talk of Alaska will continue.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Providence Imaging Center, offering 3D mammography since January 2014, technology that helps their radiologists detect breast cancer. Learn more at provimaging.com. It's time for the Healthy Futures Challenge. Pull out the jump ropes or go sledding with the family and get out and play. Get moving with activities the whole family enjoys. Find out if your child's elementary school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. Healthy kids are happy kids. Inspire your kids to get out and play every day. For more ways to get active, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Well, we're getting immersed into the comic book world of Jay Torres here on Talk of Alaska, and it's mucho fun. Jay is with us by Skype, and he is the Alaska Spirit of Reading author for a number of years now. Every March or April, we bring on the author that is in a book club that a bunch of school library kids have been reading, and ask. Invite them to call up and interact with the artist. So it's been very, very interesting what happens. And so Blatchley Middle School from Sitka is on the line right now. And let's tune in to that. Okay, Jay, I believe you were there, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, howdy.
Hello.
Hello, who
hey,
do we
Blatchley,
have here?
How are you doing?
My name is Cal Talley, and I'm planning to become a writer or author.
Okay, very good. What kind of writing do you want to do?
I will dabble in everything. Fantasy, sci-fi, you know, the whole shebang.
But what I mean is, what format? Do you want to write novels? Do you want to write picture books? Comics?
Novels.
Novels. All right. That's a very disciplined line of work. You know, it takes a lot of effort to sit down and write, you know, 300 or 400, 500 pages of prose, but you know, if you really set your mind to it, you can do it.
Okay. What advice do you have for someone who wants to become a writer?
The best advice I can give to anybody who wants to be a writer is to write. Just write, write, write. Do as much writing as you can, whether it's journaling, whether it's blogging, or your own creative writing, whatever your plans are. Because it's like any other skill. You have to practice. You know, if you want to be an ice skater, you have to practice skating. If you want to be an Olympian, you have to practice your sport. Same thing.
I see. Brilliant.
Always good, too, to get somebody to actually read it and tell you what they think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've been doing.
Okay, you're going to be passing the phone now or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Other person name is escaping me right now.
It's all right.
Hello?
Hello? Who are we talking to now, Donna Blatchley?
This is Stephen Ricketts.
Hello, Stephen. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I got Jay Torres on here. I think you probably met him when he was there.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, just go right ahead then.
I was wondering when you're going to make the next Lola book, because you left me wondering what was going to happen next.
Well, that's the thing. There isn't another Lola book. It was only a one-time story. And as we were just discussing, you know, the ending is left open to your interpretation. Hopefully that's not too disappointing, but that's probably the end of Lola. I mean, I never say never. Maybe an idea will strike me later to do another story with Jesse, but for now, that's all there is.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. You know, he kind of went out on a limb that there, and, you know, it either works or it doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you got more?
No.
Okay. Anybody else want to talk over there in Bletchley?
Yeah. She's the next person.
The next person.
Thank you, Stephen.
Hello?
Hello. Who do we have now?
Dasha.
Hello, Dasha. I see we got some email from you. Go right ahead with Jay Torres.
Hi. I was wondering what you're working on now.
Actually, I just finished the lettering draft of Bigfoot Boy 3 this week. So basically, once the art is done and the lettering is put onto the page, it comes back to me to have a look again in case there are any mistakes my editor didn't catch or there's anything I want to change. So that was the last thing I did before logging on for the show today. But tomorrow, I'm going to start working on a new Batman story.
Cool.
I think so, too. Got more?
No.
No? Okay. Anybody else there?
Okay, here's the next person.
The next person. I love this. I haven't had this happen since they called up on Christmas from Barrow. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just going to say that when he was here, one of my cousins, she got a copy of the book Lola, and she had Mr. Torres sign it for me, but she didn't know how to spell my name, so she just had him put my nickname, and she gave it to me as an early birthday present.
I remember that. I don't remember the names, but I remember somebody who was very kind enough to pick up a copy for her cousin. So that's very cool. I'm glad you got it, and I hope you like it.
It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, anything more there?
Hello?
Hello. Who are we talking to now?
Carrie Sagal, one of the co-coordinators of the Spirit of Reading program, and just wanted to thank Jay for his recent tour of Alaska. It was a big
hit. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
No, I have to thank you. That was amazing. That was an amazing experience. I was about to say once in a lifetime, but I don't want to because I'd like to come back someday. And, you know, Carrie was really the driving force behind all of this, and she's the one that suggested me, and she was my handler for a couple of the cities. She took me out on a boat, which was awesome, and gave me my first driving boating lesson. So
and
a lot of
great
experiences.
We took him out on the librarian's boat, the Fucus.
The Fucus.
Yes, that was amazing.
Yes. So thank you. And that's it here from Sitka.
Hey, Carrie?
Yes.
So are you going to try and round up again next year?
Yes, we are. We have plans for next year already in the making.
I know. It's like a whole annual cycle, isn't it? It doesn't really
it
let
is.
Up. Yeah.
We fund it through a grant through the State Library and the Institute of Museum and Libraries, and the grant is due at the end of this week. So we're busy here in Sitka writing the next one.
So while Jay Torres is writing a new Batman, you're trying to gin up the money for the next round.
Yes, we are.
And Carrie, if there's
confidence.
Anything that you need from me, you know, for the grant, for the application, just let me know.
Thank you. We might use some testimonial.
Excellent. I'll be more than happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you again.
It's Jay Torres, and also we got the old school library there. And I think the school librarians get absolutely, this is, this is all volunteer work as far as they're concerned, and this is like not part of their teaching. But yeah, it obviously is part of their teaching, but at the same time, it's not. Have you experienced Jay Torres like being a role model sometimes for kids that have gone on to actually make a name for themselves yet?
I'm going to say that I'm too young for that still.
Uh-huh.
So let's give it another 10 years. But no, I mean, to be, you know, honest and serious, I have been approached by kids who have said that they've read my stuff and it inspired them to write or to draw, which is great. Maybe someday, you know, there'll be another author on here that that maybe met me while I was on tour.
It seems like the technology is changing. I mean, I always think of like the pen and ink and all that sort of thing, and I have a feeling that there's still some inking going on. But the fact of the matter is that if I were to want to launch a zine now, I could probably do it right off of a desktop computer at home if I had the right software.
Oh, for sure. People do it all the time. There's a huge webcomic scene out there, and everybody does, you know, does it from home and uploads to the internet. And you were mentioning the inking thing. More and more people are not using traditional methods like inking and using ink and paint and even pencil. More and more people are just drawing directly on their tablets, on the computer, and going the digital route. So it's becoming, you know, more of the way business is done these days.
Yeah, I miss it. And I, you know, I think some of the calligraphic feel is going now, you know, compared to some of the classics as far as the drawing is concerned. But I'm wondering what's happening to the stories, whether the stories are also going towards a shorter attention span and on like that. I mean, you get some idea of how well what you put forward succeeds. You know, I wonder if you have some thoughts on that.
Well, to be honest, it's really hard to say because, I mean, if I was able to, if I had some kind of formula that worked all the time, I would use it every day.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, you know, I've tried stuff that had less, that was more graphic and less text. And I've tried longer and shorter forms of stories to see what would work. I tend to try to choose the format for the story. But, you know, you never know what's going to stick. You never know what people are going to be into.
Yeah.
Well, so the best thing to do is just, you know, tell the story that you want to tell.
Yeah, I would think because it already has the connection. But, you know, take something like Lola here. This has a look of kind of a labor of love. And as you said, it's probably just a one of a kind. So did you, how did it work economically? How did it work financially? Did you just like keep pitching it to publishers till you got somebody that would take it, or how did that go?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have already been working with Oni Press, who are the publishers of Lola. I had done Alice and Dare was published by them first before Lola. So I already had a relationship going with those guys, and I just pitched the idea, sent in some written material and said, this is the way, this is a story and this is the way I'd like to see it developed. And they liked the idea and we kind of went from there.
So I'm kind of thinking that this would be, I mean, in terms of the kind of check you're going to get, this would be like a little bit more risky than just turning out copy for Johnny DC.
You're right. Because the way the book world tends to work, if you're doing this kind of work, like something that you generated an idea on your own, you generally get an advance against the royalties. And the royalties are what they predict the book will sell. But when you're working for, say, DC Comics or Marvel Comics on one of their big characters, you'll get a page rate and you'll get money up front. And you'll get paid as you do the work, and then you get royalties at the end. So it's a little more lucrative. You know, of course, there are people who are making really good money on their creator-owned properties. But again, it just depends on what sells and, you know, what kind of royalty agreement you've got. But, you know, for me, it's a balancing act of trying to do both things. you know, I've been lucky. Bigfoot Boy's been pretty successful. Awesome Dare's been pretty successful. So I'm able to go back to more creator-owned work and develop more new ideas that are, you know, a little riskier, as you say, in terms of the financial reward, because you never know what's going to sell. But obviously working on a Batman book, you know it's going to do well, you know, and you'll get paid regardless of how well it does.
Right. You got to keep the checks coming in. When you're in creative work, you put the work out and you get the checks back. And so a friend of mine said, well, you should do the jobs first to pay the soonest. And it's actually very good. It's very good advice. Because that regular check, that's the best check.
Yes, it is.
I mean, the big fat check is really great, but it comes and goes.
Right. Yeah, so like I say, working as a freelancer, it's kind of a balancing act. Not only do you have to have the creative side of it, but there's a business side of it that's very important. The financial side that you have to know, or you find somebody who does and get them to do your budgeting and your taxes and stuff.
Right, yeah. We're speaking with Jay Torres, author of comics here on Talk of Alaska. He's the Alaska Spirit of Reading author this year. And I'm going to get to some more questions that have come in over the email, Jay. But first, we need to take a break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Jay Torres is author of Lola, Teen Titans Go, all kinds of stuff, really. And he's with us by Skype from his home and his office in Toronto, where he writes comics. And Misty has been chiming in with five or six email questions here, and one of them takes us right back to Lola. So we already kind of blew up quite a bit of what happens in Lola, A Ghost Story, and she has a central question. And it isn't actually directly addressed when I look back through the book. How did John John die?
Actually, it is, but it's quite easy to miss. That wall at the back of the house is where he dropped his toy, if you recall. And he actually went over the wall.
As simple as that. And there's a river back there.
Yeah. So if you look at there, I don't have the book in front of me, but there's a page that shows a flashback of him reaching for the toy. And we don't really show the fall. Maybe that's what's confusing. It was sort of implied. But it's the same thing. And that's why the parents were all worried that Jesse was going to do the same thing. That's why they freaked out when he climbed the wall, because that's how his cousin had passed.
The I would imagine that the artist, Albert Orr, had a pretty good time with the religious stuff in the book, because it's sort of a Catholic holiday that's going on while this visit to Manila takes place. And so there's lots of crucifixions and so forth going on.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing about the Philippines is I think it's about 90% Catholic or more. And so this stuff is all around, and I grew up with it all around the house. So I don't know if he had fun with it, but it probably would have come very, very naturally to him because it's always there. You know, he probably just had to look up, and there's a crucifix on his own office wall or wherever he was drawing.
Yeah, and hang around your neck and in your hand.
Sure. Yeah.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere, to quote an old comic. Misty chimes in with this one, too, Jay Torres. Did your high school experience affect what happened in Jinx? Now, Jinx is one I don't know about, so you're going to need to explain that. But Misty goes on to say, I really liked it. If I had to choose one word to describe it, I would mention the word awesome.
Jinx is one of the books, or one of the stories I've written for Archie. There's two books out right now, and it's a story of a high school freshman who we follow from the first day of school, and so far we've gotten into her sophomore year. And Jinx was an older Archie character that was created by Joe Edwards and used to be a strip. And so what we've done is we've updated it. My editor, Susanna, came up with this idea to update this old character. And then they asked me to write the graphic novels about her high school experience. So that's what Jinx is about. It's sort of, like a Saved by the Bell, Degrassi kind of, you know, situation comedy. So to an extent, yeah, some of my own high school experience is in the book. It's one of those things, you know, there's a lot of coming of age themes in my work. And a lot of those things are universal, so they'll apply to a lot of stories, even though, you know, it could be a superhero story or it could be a comedy or horror story. It's just, you know, it's just a universal thing. So, yeah, nothing directly from high school. I kind of already did that with my very first work called Copybook Tales, which was about kids growing up in high school in the 80s. So it's kind of like the Wonder Years, but it took place in the 80s. So as far as Jinx is concerned, a lot of it is just, you know, created with more modern situations in hand, like, you know, girls trying to get to play boys sports and kids having issues with cell phone rules at school and that kind of thing.
Oh, you have all sorts of material there. Archie. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think I even kind of remember that character from, you know, like 60 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, she was called Little Jinx at the time. And she had blonde hair, pigtails, and a red dress. And she would usually get into trouble with her dad. And so that dynamic and that relationship is still in the book the books that I wrote. And like I said, you know, a lot of universal themes, coming of age. So it still applies, you know, 50, 60 years later.
Right. Yeah. I still get a little distressed sometimes that they keep bringing things back over and over again. It's like the definition of postmodernism, you know, nobody ever has a new idea anymore.
Right, right. And I know that part of it in comics is that sometimes they have to do it in order to maintain the copyright. Yeah. So if they let the concept be dormant for too long, they could lose the copyright. But I know for this case, for Jinx, it was an idea that my editor had, and then she pitched it to the powers that be. They liked it, and she recruited me to write it. So that's, you know, it came from a more creative place, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's a great one, I think. Mary from Eagles View Elementary in Unalaska has emailed and basically is passing on the questions from the fourth graders. So you ready?
Sure.
All right. The fourth graders have a few questions and comments. Now, Ian says, I love your work. And Conan says, I like your books and your work. And Aldrin said, I really love your books. I believe that. You probably met all these. And
yes.
Rihanna said, what is it like to be an author, which we could do the whole show on, and we kind of have been. But let's combine that with Veronica's, which is, what's your inspiration to be an author?
Well, as I was saying earlier, I've always liked reading. I've loved comics since I was, you know, old enough to pick one up. And same thing with books. I love stories. I love storytellers. So I guess I wanted to be one myself. And I gravitated towards comics because I just love them as a kid. I love the idea of words and pictures coming together to tell a story in a way that you don't really get in a book or would even get in a movie. So that's where that, you know, I guess the inspiration to do comics came from. And what's it like to be an author and what's it like to be a comic book author? I love it. I really do. And I consider myself very lucky to be able to be doing something that I really enjoy and, you know, being able to share it with people. And it's given me a lot of great opportunities, like being able to travel to Alaska and meet literally hundreds of students that I never would have crossed paths with and people who had read my books. So it's amazing. It's great to be a writer.
I think we could even say awesome, Jay.
Yes, awesome.
And Wendler joins us. I think that's middle school in Anchorage. Howdy. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Jay Torres. Got to make it snappy here. Only got a few minutes left.
Hi, Jay. This is Susan, the librarian at Wendler. And first, we just wanted to thank you for your visit to our school. and I have a couple of students that were at your visit, and they have some questions for you. So the first person here is Bryce.
Go ahead, Bryce.
Hi. I just want to know, what do you plan on doing for your next book?
Well, he already covered that.
Okay. Well, I think maybe he means my next creator-owned book. I am working on something, but it's not really fully developed yet. But it's kind of a baseball story. So hopefully I can report about it on my blog or on Facebook closer to the fall. So keep an eye out on that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for the question.
Anybody else?
From Emma. What's your most favorite book that you've written?
I probably have to say Bigfoot Boy because it's my newest, and I tend to like the newest project that I just completed the most because it's new and I'm excited to get it out there and for people to see it. Right now I'd probably have to say Bigfoot Boy.
And okay. I think I said it was middle school, but it's actually middle school?
Yes, it's a middle school. We're middle school. So we've got 7th and 8th graders here.
All right.
So our next student is David.
All right, David. Got a minute, David.
All right, Mr. Torres, can I ask what inspired you to become a comic book writer?
Basically, I love comics all my life, and I love stories told in that medium. So it's something that I wanted to do since as far back as I can remember.
Okay.
Here's one from Elizabeth in Alaska. It says, is there a book of Raven without her cape? This is another one I don't know about yet.
Is there a book of Raven without her cape?
Cape, yeah.
Interesting. Not specifically, but there might be an issue of Teen Titans Go where she doesn't wear it for a little bit, but she's kind of like Superman. She always has that cape and cloak on.
Anybody else out there at Wendler?
Yes, our last person here is John.
Okay, John.
Hi, Mr. Torres. I have a question for you. What is the hardest book you've written so far?
Ooh, good one.
The hardest. Oh, boy, I've never thought about that. You know what? It's probably what I'm working on right now, the baseball story I was talking about, because it's more than a baseball story. It involves internment camps in Vancouver. So it's pretty serious, but I don't want the story to be too depressing.
Okay, we're out of time. Boring. Yeah, we're out of time. Thanks so much, Jay Torres. Thanks to
all. My pleasure, guys. Thank you, Wendler.
Thanks to this Alaska Spirit of Reading. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Join business, civic, and government leaders from across Alaska and the nation for the 2014 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference, May 1st and 2nd at the Dena Center in Anchorage. Learn how Alaska can become a world leader in this fast-growing industry. Early registration ends March 28th. More information at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. Clean energy, it's everyone's business. This message sponsored by REAP. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.